Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is May 26, 2020, a coolish Tuesday morning here in Nashville after a rain last night. As we get started today, let me remind everyone that the Mark Fraley Podcast is available on iTunes and on several other podcast providers. Please find us and subscribe, and that way you will be sure to get notices when new programs are published. Also, find us on Facebook. Our page is called the Mark Fraley Podcast. Not only do we announce new programs on that page, but we also frequently share news items which will be of interest to our listeners. Many of those news items are by way of follow-up on the topics discussed in previous programs. I am a man with way too many hobbies and interests. Some of you may know, who know me well, may know that I spend a considerable amount of my free time engaged in genealogy research. This has been extraordinarily rewarding to me in so many ways. I've gone to interesting places associated with my family. I've met many interesting people and learned fascinating stories. I'm often asked to assist others with getting started in doing family research. And I've wanted to present a podcast episode on that subject for a long time. And so today, my guest is Sarah Klingis, who is the president of the Northeastern Pennsylvania Genealogical Society, NEPEGS, as it's referred to. I've been a member of this organization for many years, and for a time served on the board of directors. Sarah and I discuss today the remarkable work that her organization is doing, and we learn from her some basic starting points to be considered when starting work on your family tree. Along with this podcast episode, I've also posted a PowerPoint presentation which I have developed on the subject of getting started with family history. And so I hope you will enjoy my interview today with Sarah Klingis. So Sarah Klingis, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sarah, you're coming to us live from Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Is that where you're located?
Yes.
Thank you for joining us here on Memorial Day. It's a beautiful day here, too hot, but what's the weather like up there in Northeast?
It's finally getting to be spring. It's getting warmer and warmer by the day.
Fantastic. Sarah, I want to introduce you to my audience. You're the current president of the Northeastern Pennsylvania Genealogical. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And tell us about that organization, about how long you've been involved with it, and a little bit about your background in genealogy.
Okay, the society began in 1992 with a small group of people that were just interested in getting together and discussing genealogy. Right. And then expanded out to where they wanted to make sure that, you know, that things were preserved and that the community got a chance to get access to certain records. And now they have quite a collection that's just built and built over time that people could come and take a look at digitally. And then they also have genealogies that have been donated. You know, there's a lot there to look at.
Okay.
I myself didn't get involved with the society until a few years ago, but, you know, just jumped right in and, you know, was helping them with research requests. And it built from there. And I got picked as president just late last year.
Okay. So in full disclosure to my audience, I've been a member of that organization for probably 10 or 15 years and was on the board for a period of four or five years. Enjoyed the camaraderie with the people on that board who work very, very hard.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely a great, especially if it's something that you're so interested in, it's so like-minded, like you just, the discussions and everything are so great.
So you all actually have a physical location, an office in downtown Wilkes-Barre. The public can visit.
Yes. Now, right now with everything going on with COVID-19, we're closed until further notice. We hope to reopen soon.
Right.
When we do reopen, we're at 57 North Franklin Street in Wilkes-Barre on the second floor.
Okay.
It's a newer location for us. It's a beautiful building.
Right.
They've been doing some upgrades and everything for us. It's a really nice space to be able to research.
And you all, that's about what, two or three blocks off of from Public Square.
It's actually right up. Yeah, it is. It's right around. What do you call it? If you go right up the square, you go right on Market Street and then make a right, and it's right in that block there, Franklin
right.
Street.
So I am a member of that org because my family settled in that. It was natural for me to associate with that organization because that's where the records are. Are there organizations like yours around all over America?
Yeah, a lot of communities, like each county or each region, there are many. A lot of times, like, you just have to just look up There is actually a family search wiki where you could actually look up by county and by area, and a lot of them will tell you if there's, you know, say a historical society or genealogical society in your area.
And then there's a national organization, genealogical societies. I can't remember what that's called.
That is, I can't remember offhand the name because those names kind of escape me at the right time. Right. But yeah, there is, I believe it's a fraternal genealogical or something along that line. They got absorbed into the National Genealogical Society, and they're actually working together. Right. One is going to do the, you know, to help the societies, and the other one's going to do more of the preserving of the records.
Right. Now, Sarah, you are a volunteer at this. You're not time at this president, but you do have some special training.
Yeah, I went through a certificate program through Boston University. It was a great program in genealogical research. It was a semester long program. It gave me a lot of extra boost on, you know, tips and things like that.
Right.
So it was a great, and from that I've gone on to do professional genealogy as well.
So you are available for hire to help customers who are
in
interested.
Addition to, yes.
Right. Very good. So, you know, I've been doing genealogy since before the internet. There wasn't even personal computers.
I remember when I started, it was a lot of microfilm machines and just looking through record books itself. But there wasn't anywhere near as much as there is now.
Right. And so for the person who wants to get started today, their family history, probably an awareness of the old-fashioned resources, but not really necessary.
Yeah, I mean, you still have to go old school, so to speak, sometimes, because for as much as there is online, there's still a lot at the local level as well. Like, you have to complement the two together.
Right.
You can't just rely on, say, simply just Ancestry or just Family Search. You have to work with a little bit of each of them.
All right. Well, we're getting ahead of ourselves. So, if you were to advise pure newbie, what are the first steps that are necessary to get involved with?
I would just say, just to start by jotting down what you know first, like what you've heard from, you know, family members, like, say, you know, your grandmother's name and things, because we've had people come in that some of them don't know, like, they know, say, their grandmother's first name, but not her maiden name. So there's a lot of gaps in there that when you write down, then you realize where you have to go from there, like what information you can get from there.
Right.
That would be a great start. From there, my first suggestion would be to look at census records. Just to get, like, they're not always the most accurate things to look at, but it'll at least give you an idea of where your ancestors lived at a certain time. So then you could then go to the records within that.
So, I have found early on my grandparents still living when I started. I gained a lot of information from them just by talking with them and writing down.
Yeah, and it's definitely a great idea to do that, in addition to writing down what you already know, complementing that, especially, like, even if necessarily, like, say, like, your grandparents aren't alive, say, like, a brother or sister of theirs is still alive. You know, anybody, like, the closest relative you could find,
right,
that would still have a lot of that information in their head to give to you. It's very important to sit down and write down those.
In terms of keeping track of what you have learned, I used to have, like, a cardboard box file for each family, and that was sort of how I kept the information. I was often difficult to sort and retrieve, even get your brain wrapped around you had in that box.
Yeah. There could be so many bits and pieces of information. It can become a bit much.
So today, there are computer programs available to assist the amateur genealogy.
Yes. I mean, a lot of the websites have ones themselves. It all depends on how you, like, each one works differently. It all depends on which one you prefer.
Right.
Family Search has one. You could set up one, Ancestry the same way. There are still a lot of, like, Family Tree Maker programs and things like that you could keep everything all in one. There's a Legacy Family Tree as well. There's all, you know, you would look into which one works best for you, because some people like the format of one but not on the other.
Okay.
The only thing is that to be leery of is there are certain ones that allow others to make changes to your tree. So you have to be a little leery of, if you say you put this information and you look back later and it's different, it's because there are certain ones, like particularly Family Search, who allow outsiders besides yourself to go in, and if, say, they have info they think is updated, they could add it in. And you just have to be a little leery of that part.
So Families is a free program, that a program that, mistaken, is affiliated with Latter-day Church. Am I correct?
That's correct. That's correct. Yep.
And Family Search has a lot of different elements. They the repository of record freely available.
There's a number of things, like some of it you could do through their regular search. Right. There's also a catalog, if you know, they do by town. You could check, they have a lot of vital records on there. Some of them are still a little restricted. You have to go to a family search center to look at them. But most of them, as long as there's a little camera symbol when you get in there, you could look at it right online from home for free.
You know, I'm just giving you an example. Again, looking at the records in Luzerne County, Pennsylvania, they have actually images, marriage going back to a part of up until.
Yeah, they actually have back. Yeah, they have from 1885 when the marriage licenses started up until, I believe it's 1950. You could get on there.
Terrific resource. And Family Search also has a place where you keep your family tree on that site. As you say, there's difficulty with that tree.
You have to just keep that part in mind when you're looking, which is good. If they have it, it's a great thing if people have information to say you don't. And as long as they have a source for it, then it can be a great thing. But you just have to be leery if they just have information they're putting in about that, any kind of source in that. That's the only thing you have to keep.
How, in your personal genealogy, how do you keep your...
I keep my tree through Ancestry. That's just, it's the format that I prefer. Like I said, each person is different. Some might like one a little, I just personally like the format of that one.
Right.
And I still keep old school, you know, binders with things and that. It's always a good idea to have a backup to the backup. It's just, you know, especially if anything happens with the computer and that, this way you at least have your original notes or, you know, like copies of the records and things. You can at least, you have that somewhere else to go to in case something.
So Ancestry.com is a subscription type service.
Yes. Now you could actually start a tree on there for free, but as far as looking fully at the records and that, that's through a subscription.
It's a trial period.
Yes. Yeah. You get so many days free. And then after that, they charge it by 6 months or, you know, have whatever level that you want it to. Yeah.
And so the information that you gather developing that is stored in cloud.
Yes. Yeah. Anything. Yeah. It's stored within their, yeah. Cause there's records you could detach from their record collection. And then you could also upload, like say you have a scan of a record you found that they wouldn't have on Ancestry. You could actually scan it and add it into the gallery on your.
You know, one of the things that I do, I started with Family Tree Maker, desktop type program. It's resident on my computer.
Yes.
So there's a way for you to sync. I also have an Ancestry subscription, but I can sync what I have on my computer with what's in the cloud, so that I always have my own copy, so to speak.
Yes, and it is. It's always good to have a backup within your program. But yeah, as long as you upload it as a what they call a GEDCOM file, which is the best transfer way for that, as long as you upload it that way, it'll sync right up with everything.
So a person just getting started, you recommended that one of the first things to look at census. So talk a little bit about the U.S. Census, what they can find in.
There's a lot of really great things, even though, like I said, I proceeded by saying there is some inaccuracies because it all depends on who wrote things down, and sometimes there's a miscommunication with language barriers and that. But it's generally at least a great way to start to see, you know, what children were living at that time. There's a column in two of the censuses, the 1900 and the 1910 census, where they would ask about the wife and the family. They'd say, okay, how many children have you had and how many are now living? Oh. And it could actually tell you how many, like, for example, if say, like I myself found my great grandmother, I knew my grandfather had 5 brothers and sisters. Here it turns out he had 10 brothers.
Oh boy. But
because five of them died at 5 or younger. So that'll, because there's such a big gap with the U.S. Census, there's 10 years. So a lot could happen in 10 years. They could have had a couple kids that died, you know, so this way, this gives you that information in there. Sadly, one of the censuses, the 1890, got destroyed in a fire. So there's only very bits and pieces, remnants of that. But there are things like directories and that you could look to complement, to at least tell where they're at then, even if you don't have the
census. We're talking about the 18th census.
Yes.
It wasn't just destroyed in Luzerne County, Pennsylvania. It was destroyed.
It was most of the country. I'd say maybe like 1% of it survived in certain states, and it's just spread.
But there are some state governments that do their own. New York, for
yes, there's New York. New Jersey does one as well. There's quite a few. So that could at least help you cover some of the gap. Like some of them do theirs like every, like say like 1895 instead of night. Like they don't do it right on the even year. Sometimes they do it in between.
So Where was I next? Oh, church record. Now, your organization, I should say, for people that are unfamiliar with Wilkes-Barre, Scranton area, early on in American, from the early times of American, it has been a place where people came from all over the world, to ethnic community, German, Lithuanian, Slovakian, Irish, you know, you name it, Italian, all in discrete kind of neighborhood, kind of keeping to themselves. Mm-hmm. And that was maintained a true statement probably up through the 19, maybe somewhat into, but your organization got the privilege of actually working with the Catholic diocese, microfilm or digitize the church record, the entire Catholic diocese. Tell us about that story.
Yeah, that was a couple year project. Volunteers went out to the churches and they were given whatever books were still around, you know, because some got, you know, misplaced, things like that. Whatever the church had available that they still had, they, you know, they brought it to our building. They, you know, our staff scanned it, you know, made nice digital copies of it, returned the books. So this way it gives a chance to look at the records without having to touch the book, you know, without having to damage the books any further than they are, because some of them weren't in the best shape. This way you could at least look at them without, you know, it preserves them in a much longer term setting. Right. It was a great project. It was a great boost to our society to have, because with so many people, sometimes, you know, their family started in one church, moved to another. This way it's all in one place. They could just look and just, you know, just find, especially to the church records before a certain time period, the church records are where you're going to find things like birth information, death information, marriage information. Because before a certain time period, they just didn't have those in civil records. So the church records are a major go-to for a certain time period.
How many counties and how many churches you all had to go out and digitize?
It was hundreds of, it was easily hundreds of churches and it was 11 counties. It was all counties of the diocese, 11 counties, including Lackawanna, Luzerne, Wyoming. There's a lot in the collection. Right. It covers every little, you know, mission church to the big ones, you know, all everything in between.
And so the records, and I think you, in fact, responsible for getting a record for me, the marriage of great, and that was for the Sylvania kept record. So that was the only available record of that. So
yes, exactly. Yeah. Before, when it comes to birth and death information, anything before 1893, if the church kept those, that's where it would be at. Right. Before 1885 on the marriages. So that is sometimes it's the only source of information during, right, especially before the 1880s.
In a similar kind of a vein, when I was getting started in doing research Fraley, I was planning a trip to Germany. I was trying to figure out where would I go in Germany to visit the places where they came from. I was able to find out what town it came from by the death record of my great-grandfather. Recorded in German in the Lutheran church there.
Yeah, it's a great, because especially depending on each priest, some of them were very detailed. I mean, they put things like in the marriage record, you'd find out, you know, the parents' names of, you know, say like a grandparent or great-grandparent. You'd find that town name that wasn't in another record. Like, it really is a really great resource.
So are those records available to the public over the internet, or how do people that are getting those get them from?
They'd have to come in person to the building and look at them. We also do take research requests. If, say, they live far, you know, say if they live in a diverse state, we could, you know, as long as they have the basic info of what they're looking for, we could actually look for it for them in our collection. We've been trying to steadily build, not just having the Catholic churches, having, you know, like I said, Lutheran churches, you know, all kinds of different denominations to complement, because while Catholic was a big population, there was just as many who were, you know, who were of other faiths. So we've been trying to build those up a little bit better as well. But yeah, they could come right into the society and look, you know, they could either do a daytime pass and come and look, or they could get a membership and look, you know, come anytime and look as long as we're open. And like I said, that we do research requests, especially if they live in a different state and just can't make it in.
And I know the answer to this question, but I, just so the public knows, what's the reason for not having the...
With a lot of them, particularly with the Diocese of Scranton collection, that was part of the agreement. In order to be able to get those records digitized, right, they were concerned about privacy issues. Right. So they didn't want it to be available online. So in order to be able to get with such a great collection, we had to be able to agree to not put it online.
And the same is true with the U.S. Census. The most recent census that's available online right now is not standard. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, the next one will come out another 2 years is the next one going to be out.
So what is it, a 70-year rule or something?
It's a 72-year. It's a 72-year rule with that. And even as far as our church collection, it's a 70-year, except for the death records. Those are completely open. But that was another part of the agreement, was every up to 70 years, you could look anything back further than that.
So Sarah, it's been my experience here recently that a lot of discussion and dialogue around family dinner tables, this time in Thanksgiving celebration, people talking about their DNA tests that through Ancestry, 23andMe, or one of the other, is that a continuing topic in?
Yeah, we do get quite a few people that have done, they've done the tests that are coming in. Some use it just as a way to find their ethnicity and they leave it at that. Some people want to go further and say, okay, who are the people behind this ethnicity? Which is always a great idea to do, to just leave it at the numbers and that. I mean, it's an interesting thing, but then to get the stories behind it is always a lot of fun.
So are you available, your organization, available to assist people in getting started?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. We could sit down if they have any questions. You know, we have different, different knowledge bases between us, and which is great. Some people, they're not good at one section, but there's another, between our group, we have enough knowledge to be able to help them get on a great start.
So have you had any interesting stories dealing with customers talking about their ancestry?
Yeah, there's been here and there. I mean, it's not as broad up. Some of them were already into it already before they did the DNA test, and they, some of them, it's been a source, because people don't realize that in addition to the charts and that they get with, okay, they're, this much percentage English or whatever it is, that there's cousin matches on there that they could connect with family through it.
Right.
And it's fairly accurate. Like, some of them are quite surprised at just how accurate it is.
Right.
I mean, really, like, there's somebody, if it says it's your first cousin, it really generally, unless they're matched to code, it really is your first cousin.
Right.
It's a great, I mean, sometimes it brings out family secrets, which is bound to happen as well.
Well, I guess that was the reason for my question. I know that that's occurred in my family. And so people learn about their families, things that they didn't expect to learn.
No. And that's just, if they will, they'll find cousin, like they'll find a match that's a little bit closer. Like, okay, this is somebody I've never met. And then they start to get a little, okay, what kind of secret is that going to, what is that going to bring out? And they, sometimes they get contacted by them because the other person is just as, it's just this questioning, okay, where does this person come from?
Right.
But it can reveal, and it can be a great source, because there are people who have found, I mean, not necessarily locally, but there's stories and things people have found, half sisters, and especially if they were adopted, it's a great source for them to find family if they're looking for it.
When I first got my ancestry result, was a second cousin reported, it's a cousin provided, mm-hmm. you, it was not a name I was familiar with. And after contacting this, and I discovered that he had surely was my second cousin, but been put up for adoption, not raised by, did the test so as to find his
mm-hmm.
and living in California. So there you go.
Yeah, and that's, we've had in my own family, we had one that they tested, and it was a reconnection through, because she knew, the person who she had set it up for her father, she knew he had been adopted. And between a couple different people, we were able to figure out, where he fit in the family tree, because it was a pretty, when it's that close of a match,
right.
You're much more likely, especially if they're like a second, third cousin, it's a lot easier to find that way.
Do you find that people that are into this hobby use it as an adjunct to their traveling or travel plan?
Yes, we've had quite a few people that say, okay, I'm going to Ireland. They want to find out what town to go visit while they're over there that their ancestors came from. We've had that a number of times.
Right.
We've had just as many people who are looking for dual citizenship as well. That's they're looking for a particular record to complete that. But we have a lot of people that they're planning trips, that ancestry trip, so to speak. And they're, they want to know the information before they go. So
right.
That way they can know where to stop and, find that one village or wherever that their family came from.
It can be a remarkable experience to go to the places.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Sarah, I want to thank you for spending time with us today and letting us learn about the Northeastern Pennsylvania genealogical.
Yeah. And thank you for having me on and to be able to spread the word about our great little group. And if anybody wants any more information, they could go to nepgs.com. and they could check out, there's at least an index of exactly what our records, so that way they could get an idea. So then when things open back up and that, then they could hopefully stop by and check our records out.
So Sarah, along those lines, you have a website, I know, a Facebook page.
Yes, there's a Facebook page. It's under Northeast Pennsylvania Genealogical Society. Okay. You could just look it up through that right on Facebook.
Right.
There's a group one as well as a regular page. And we try to update on there. If, say, we get a new thing to our collection and things like that, people can get updates through that.
Sarah, thank you again so very much for spending your time with us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Have a good day.
You too.